Welcome to the podcast. I'm Ben.
I'm May.
And I'm Max. And we were had.
Can you believe it?
There are twists and there are turns.
Defleshed is a standard death.
Oh, that's fun.
We were had.
We were.
This week on the podcast, who killed Hollywood starlet Krista Helm? Also, who gave Ben COVID?
Cat's out of the bag. I thought that this video editing was smooth enough.
It doesn't
but
look,
no,
it doesn't look
this
unnatural.
This is what we like to call in the biz special effects.
Yeah, yep, yep. If Future Max does it right, Ben will seamlessly be sitting betwixt us on the couch.
You won't even be able to tell he's not here.
You won't be able to tell. It'll just be May, Max, and Ben on the couch as usual.
It's pretty amazing that we didn't get COVID because we hang out with Ben literally every
constantly.
Single day.
Constantly. I had lunch with him the day before he was positive. And I got tested and I was negative, but that's because I got tested positive for the strain of not being a cuck bitch.
I don't understand how we've been talking about this. You're not a cuck for getting it.
What are you
cuck?
You're
a cuck and believing that you have it.
I never said I believed it. You guys are the ones that don't want to hang out.
That's a good point. That's a good point. He would have come over if we had him.
Oh, yeah.
But
if we would have allowed it.
We follow the rules. You know what I mean? COVID is... how does it feel?
It's not that bad. I miss you guys. I miss you guys. Oh.
That's
miss
the worst
the,
part.
It's,
the Dementors.
That's like 2 weeks in a row.
I know.
What was it?
The Dementors. Here's the thing. As you're missed, I hope the episode comes out good. This is a really fun topic. So try your best to... I mean, who are we kidding? Ben, do your usual work. I'm sure it'll be fine. It's not like...
I'm gonna be better with COVID. You're gonna see. That's just my secret weapon.
All right, Krista Helm.
Okay, get ready for this one. I'm gonna start things off with a quick overview. Tall, blonde, and gorgeous, Krista Helm could count only bit parts on Wonder Woman and Starsky and Hutch as her high points in Hollywood, but she excelled at parties and in bedrooms in the Hollywood Hills.
Bedrooms? Was she a porn star?
Where she consorted with the likes of Warren Beatty, Mick Jagger, Joe Namath, and the Shah of Iran. Details of her trysts Helm kept in her sex diary, and that is why on the night in 1977, when she was found stabbed and bludgeoned to death on a street in West Hollywood, police suspected she had been killed for what she knew.
Wow.
The diary, complete with a rating system for the famous men she bedded, had disappeared.
Savage.
Also, tapes of her sexual encounters secretly recorded by her were also missing. Was the actress murdered because she had turned to extorting the celebrities and politicians she knew? The last lead in her now cold case is a cryptic postcard Helm sent to a friend before she died. Quote, "I am in way over my head here," she wrote. "I'm into something I can't get out of."
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
End of episode. That was efficient.
Let me tell you something. I realize that I put this paragraph in the beginning and I give away a lot of the exciting parts of the case. But I'm going to go into big details here.
So she's not a sex worker. She's just somebody having a lot of
sex. She's not a sex worker, although we will get into the point, the thing. She was hanging out with this guy in New York City that ran a modeling agency that's how she got, she became a lot, the Shah of Iran was really using her services a lot.
Are you saying it's like code for an escort
service? It was code for an escort service. That was the rumor mill. The escort service was used by parties and who was the big, like studio, whatever. Who was that artist? Pollock?
Unite.
No, who was it?
R. Kelly?
The big studio?
No, like the studio doing cocaine in studio, whatever.
Oh, Studio 69.
54?
54.
There we go.
But who were the famous artists that went there? Was it Jackson Pollock? Or was it the guy with the B name?
Yeah, what the fuck is his name? Why are we...
Wasn't it like
Andy
Warhol?
Yes, Andy Warhol.
God
and those
damn
people.
It.
I'm also...
The recall today. I'm hungover.
Yeah.
I'm not...
I feel
I'm
fine,
not firing on all
but
cylinders
I'm just an idiot.
I'm sharper than ever. I'm telling you, this thing really gets
COVID,
the synapses
COVID
going.
Brought him back. Can I ask you guys this? How did we feel about my true crime voice on the beginning there? Did you notice a difference?
Of course I noticed a difference.
How did it feel?
It
did it feel good? Okay, good.
It was fun.
That was your true crime voice? I thought it was more like an E! Hollywood.
Oh,
kind of like.
I guess, yeah, it could go either way. But I just wanted to.
You can see it on Forensic Files.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Question about the rating system.
Yes.
I was going to ask.
Is that based off of looks? Is it based off of how good they were in bed?
I think it's mostly based off of. It's a sex diary with sex ratings. So it's based off of sex. But they never. There's no information here. Like, they don't. I got information from whokilledkristahelm.com, a CBS article, and one other things. But here's the thing. There's no Wikipedia page for her or her murder. Also, when the story was first broke, it was a very small little article.
Really?
And not much else has happened to it.
So weird.
There was an episode of Oxygen's Mysteries and Scandals that covered this. And her daughter has been, she brought it, after years of like begging, it became a cold case that they revisited, but they still didn't find it. I'm giving away a lot of things. But anyway, something's up with this case. Somebody's keeping it quiet. Because this should be a huge case.
Yeah, absolutely.
She fucked everybody.
It's so mean to do that.
What? to score them? Yeah.
Like, that's so cruel. You guys remember a few years ago, I think it was in college, like when we were in college, there was a website that you could go on and girls rated guys that they went on dates with.
No.
Yeah, it was called like Lulu's or something like
that. Oh, I do remember
that. Yeah, and you could rate people. Lulu's. And it would be like things like, oh, we went out to eat and he pretended he forgot his wallet. Like shit like that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I remember that website. That was funny.
And that's basically how Facebook started, right? Just like rating
Facebook
people.
Facebook was hot or not, because Zuck was worried about telling other people if they were hot or not. That metaverse bitch.
He is such a Disney villain. Like, he's the worst person in the world.
He's a cartoon fuck.
It really is.
I think it's okay to rate people if the range of people that you're sleeping with goes from Mick Jagger to the Shah of Iran.
Yes.
Then you just got to keep track.
Better or worse?
Yeah.
Mick Jagger, the Shah.
I also, and she was attractive.
Okay.
I think it's more meaningful if a hot person is doing rating. I'm sorry to say it.
Yeah.
Is that wrong to say?
Well, ugly people are just happy to be there.
Oh! So- What's the thankful score? all right. Should we get into it? All the dirty deets?
Yes, please.
Well, we already know the fucking
thing. Is there
a
published copy of this diary?
No, it's not at all public at all. There's no mention of the scores or how the scoring system worked. And I've talked this throughout the day. I've mentioned it to people that like I'm like covering this like interesting story. And their first question is, how does she do the scoring?
Right.
And there's nothing. It's not about longevity. I don't have any idea about the scoring system. And that's all I'd like to know.
I'm sorry.
When it's your turn and you're telling people things, you refer to it as covering this story.
Yes, as a journalist. As a journalist.
The most inflated sense of what the podcast is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fake news CNN calls themselves journalists, but I can't. Suddenly the bar has been raised.
That's fair.
All right. So there was an episode of Oxygen. This is Oxygen Channel, Oprah's network. Mm-hmm. Mysteries and Scandals is a TV show there that focused on her untimely death. So she was murdered in West Hollywood in 1977. So her daughter, Nicole Clements, was also featured in the episode, hoping to find some sort of justice or solace all these years later. She goes, quote, "My mother was a very complicated woman, like so many of us. She used her brain as well as her charm. She was warm and loving to those of us she loved and cared for. She was also fearless with her ambition." Clements still struggles with the reality of her mother's death, noting that some memories are just too harsh to recall. In the episode, it's noted that Clements wasn't even told the real reason her mother passed away until later. Quote, "I believe it was a couple weeks after her death when press about her real cause of death came out. I don't have a clear memory of who and how I found out, as this seems to have been blacked out in my memory."
Wow.
She got fucked up by this. Let me tell you something.
Well, your mom gets murdered. I think that's going to be pretty...
I don't think you feel good.
Yeah.
I don't think it feels good. All right. So let's talk about Krista Helms' early life. Krista's story began on November 11th, 1949 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Her father, Harry, worked for an asphalt company and her mother was a housewife. Her mother was an alcoholic and that caused a lot of problems in her parents' marriage. They divorced 3 years after Krista's birth. At the transformative age of 16, she became pregnant by 27-year-old Gary Clements.
Oh, boy.
And there's the secret of why you become sexually promiscuous, because you were targeted as a young child.
Yep.
He was a business owner. He ran karate schools. It was through her association with Gary that Krista became adept at martial arts. She was a badass.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like a real black belt. Krista and Gary were married soon after she became pregnant with his child. The ceremony took place in Chicago. Marital bliss was short-lived. Gary left a pregnant Krista the day after their wedding.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So they got married. She was pregnant. And then he just dipped?
27-year-old businessman impregnated the 16-year-old girl, shotgun wedded her, and the next day disappeared.
Oh,
wait,
my
businessman. I thought he was a martial artist.
No, no, he owns the
he
martial
owned
artist
the martial
stores.
Arts schools. I you have to trust stores, that he was probably the stores. I'd like to have one martial arts, please. He owned the schools, but you have to assume he was a sensei.
Yeah, he's got to be the sensei.
He's
but he
be
doesn't.
The sensei.
Gary sounds like a white guy. Was he?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure in the 70s they were really worried about culturally appropriating karate.
Have you guys ever done karate?
I did for 7 years.
Oh wait, I think we covered this on another episode. Yeah. That's so funny.
For 7 years?
Why are we talking about karate all the time?
For 7 years, it comes up. 7 years.
So you could really fuck someone up.
No, you've seen me move. I don't.
That's but isn't true. That part of like, no, okay.
That's all part of it.
Right.
Let
but
me tell
maybe
you something.
You're just
I
one
will
of those
say
guys.
When I started taking kickboxing classes, I was better than the other people just from the formation of it. But yeah. That, am I, do I want to get into a fight? No. If I was ever hit, I would be upset.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but you live on the Upper East Side. The other people in your class were probably like 65-year-old women. I don't know.
Oh, some of them were young girls. But I was really hitting the bag better than them. Let me tell you that. Okay, so this guy fucking ditched. Years later, Krista would tell her daughter and others that Gary had been killed in a motorcycle accident not long after fleeing from the family. She moved to New York, basically, searching for a better life.
Oh, my gosh.
Daughter.
Okay.
All right, New York
so
City
life. So the
marriage
get annulled, I guess, if he just walks out after day one?
I don't think. In the 60s again,
did she bring
again,
her daughter
know.
To New York?
She brought her daughter to New York. It's not always clear if her daughter's with her or not. I don't think she's. Mm-hmm. I think she kind of leaves her with New York when she moves.
Okay. And this is the daughter that's been on the oxygen program.
This is Nicole. She had one one daughter. Okay. So New York City. She always used strategic relationships with rich dudes, starting from the jump. While she was living in Manhattan, she met a wealthy producer named Stuart Duncan. Remember that name? For all intents and purposes, Duncan became her main financial supporter. Duncan's family started the Leia and Perrins Company. You might know them as the organization behind the famous Worcestershire sauce. But he had no intentions of following in their footsteps. His ambitions lived in the realm of stage and screen production. Duncan's third attempt at producing a successful play turned out to be The Charm. Prior to opening, he offered Krista a financial stake in its future success. The play was Godspell. You know that. Godspell.
Do I know?
Was,
wow.
Godspell was a famous play.
Oh, I don't know.
It was a great
Godspell
success.
Godspell launches the career of Eugene Levy, Martin Short, Gilda Radner. We're talking.
Yeah. She made a considerable profit from that. So the Shah is frequently associated with Krista's life story as well. She was pictured wearing jewels she claimed had been gifted to her by the Shah. Her daughter remembers being in the company of the Shah during a trip to see her mother. In fact, nearly everyone associated with Krista knew about her ongoing trysts with the Shah.
Okay, was it like against his religion to be with her? Like,
well,
was
he was just the Shah of Iran, but it was like a lot of people claimed to have trysts with the Shah of Iran. I think the Shah was like fucking everybody at the time.
Really?
I've claimed it. Yeah, I've definitely said it before.
I think I've heard you say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben lost his virginity to the Shah Iran, I think. I didn't copy this part of the article, but this is when she meets this guy who's like another producer type, but also runs this modeling agency, and he's able to introduce her to a bunch of people. She also hooks up with him later in LA too, and he's like, I'll introduce you to everybody you need to know. This guy's just like a cool. You know, he's just like, we're all fucking, here's a whore, you know, that kind of guy.
Yeah, okay. Is that cool?
No, that's not cool.
Yeah.
also said in this article that she would charge $60 for her, I don't know, adjusted for inflation. I hope it's a lot more.
For hanging out with
$60,
her?
I think $60 would be a lot, no? Because we're talking, we're still in the 60s?
I think we're still in the 60s, 60s, 70s.
I'll punch the numbers on that.
Yeah, crunch the numbers. So there was little doubt in Kent, one of her friends' mind, that Stuart Duncan was bankrolling Krista's style of living, even though her dance card was also occupied with the likes of other prominent figures at the time, including football legend Joe Namath.
Oh, my God, what?
Duncan even financed a full-blown movie for her to star in that never really went anywhere. It was like a horror adventure film that never really got
picked
up.
Hot girls are always in horror films.
Yeah, and he fully, like, she was like, let's make a movie. Mm-hmm. And nothing happened with that. Okay, so she moves to Los Angeles. He also financed her original stay in, like, this beautiful apartment there. In 1976, she was featured as a car hop waitress in an episode of Starsky and Hutch titled Silence, air date January 21st, 1976, and enjoyed a more prominent role in the fourth episode of the first season of Wonder Woman titled Beauty on Parade, air date October 13th, 1976.
Okay.
She continued to nab her fair share of celebrity mates as well. In fact, keeping track of her timeline of famous lovers is quite the chore. Her diary slash rating system was said to contain entries for the likes of Warren Beatty, Jack Nicholson, Mick Jagger, Joe Namath, Johnny Rivers, Desi Arnaz Jr., and many others. Krista admitted to being intimate with many of these figures in the press she generated for herself.
Mm.
Tell you what, she knew how to tell a story.
Oh, yeah.
God forbid.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this article is constantly like, there's no reason to think that what she was saying wasn't true. Like, a lot of it's backed up by friends and reports and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Honestly, is this kind of a feminist story in a way?
Explain yourself.
I'm trying to spin it.
Okay.
But in a way, like a woman who owns her sexuality.
Max, stick to the script.
In many ways, she's using other people. It doesn't seem like she's being used. You know what I mean?
But there is. But what about the ending?
Well, I don't think it works out that well.
Yeah. I would also argue that.
But what I'm saying is this is not the typical story of a starlet being preyed upon by people of power.
True.
I think it's quite the opposite. It's pretty clear that she's preying on the people of power to boost herself, which I think is a refreshing spin.
It is refreshing, but it is definitely what she's doing is super fucked up. Like if a guy was raiding women and had a diary from it and then secretly filming them, they'd go to fucking jail.
Didn't most dudes have like a little black book and shit like that? Wasn't that a popular thing?
Ben,
during the time, did your buddies have any of this?
I just want to say, we'll talk about this after the episode too, but clearly the sound from you guys is coming from Max's headphone and not May's headphone. So I make out probably about a third of the things that May has been saying over the course of this episode.
That's good. Wait, how's that possible?
Well, we're good.
Why don't you scream?
I guess I'll have to scream.
Yeah. You know what?
Just scream it.
Maybe it's better if you...
Just you guys go cheek to cheek.
Why don't you... And you know what? Never mind.
It's fine.
Ben, what are you saying?
It's okay.
You're right here in between us.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. It's my this COVID affects my damn left ear.
All right. In a 1994 interview with journalist Katie Couric on Dateline NBC, Burt Reynolds recalled an encounter he shared with a beautiful blonde woman during the mid-70s. At the conclusion of their tryst, he says the woman pulled out a notebook and began writing. She told him she was ranking their lovemaking in her journal of past lovers. "Well, how do I rate?" he asked. Reynolds didn't name Krista in this anecdote, but it stands to reason that she was likely this fling that evening.
Oh, my God.
That's fucking cool.
That is cool.
She grades while they're there?
That's badass. They're smoking a cigarette and she's fucking taking notes.
Damn. Cruel.
Yeah, cruel mistress. To grade in front of somebody is rude. Like when a teacher would grade your failed test right in front of you. What an asshole.
Or then put it down
with the letter
upside down.
Yeah, looking you in the eye the whole time. Not even looking at the problems.
I'm like, God damn it. Everybody knows I'm a fucking dum-dum. Anyway.
So this is interesting. She ended up falling for one person, or at least something close to it. In an Earl Wilson column from August of 1975, Krista claimed to have been dating actor Michael Sarrazin for the past 8 months. It's been speculated that out of all of Krista's many conquests, Sarrazin was the closest she came to falling in love. They met at a hotel pool and lived together for a brief time in his hillside homes. Mr. Sarrazin passed away in 2011, but we reached out to his siblings. They were unable to recall any memories of Krista from this time period.
Okay, great.
But it's nice. Also, they're calling them conquests for her. Again, it's a real flipped situation.
Yeah, it is.
It's interesting to hear about the men being the ones being...
Right, especially at that time.
She was also connected to Bernie Kornfeld during this period, a social worker turned controversial international financier. Kornfeld was a notorious womanizer who kept four or five women at his beck and call at all times.
Jesus Christ.
He lived in Gray Hall,
a
luxurious 40-room mansion in Beverly Hills that he purchased from actor George Hamilton. Hamilton also dated Krista for a brief time.
Oh, my God.
And would later figure prominently in the investigation of her murder. They dated for a significant stretch of time in 1976. They were reported to have met while Krista was waitressing at Sergio's Le Club. Hamilton claims that they were introduced by the Godfather producer Gray Frederickson. Frederickson, no, I'm kidding. she and Hamilton were frequently spotted around town together, including a sighting at the restaurant Ah Fong's in Beverly Hills. But by the end of the year, the relationship was kaput. Okay. She was also said to have had a relationship with Frankie Crocker, the famed New York disc jockey who first coined the phrase urban contemporary. He was contending with payola charges in a New York court at the time, but he kept a residence in Beverly Hills nonetheless. Supposedly enamored with Krista, he agreed to produce a disco album for her.
Okay.
And during these sessions, there were a lot of famous people involved, and a lot of them kind of were obsessed with her, and some of them she dated and not.
Also, so she's like, she's a singer, songwriter, actress.
She's somebody with, what I would guess is, I never saw any of her roles, marginal talent, but off screen, boy, was she magic. Let me tell you that.
A lot of chemistry, this woman.
Boy, she could suck the air out of the room. Let me tell you that. When she walk, you watch. Also included in these recording sessions were backup singers Debbie Danilow and Krista's then roommate, Patty Collins.
She fucked
Patty Collins remains one of the key suspects in Krista's murder, but little is known about either about her either before or since the events of February 12th.
That would also be very feminist if of this. Woman if a woman killed her, a woman, finally.
I hope you've been paying attention to all these names, and I should have said that, because the important thing to remember here is that I never mentioned it, but there really is no idea who did this.
Okay.
I would. This is one where it's one of the really more open-ended ones where it's going to end up, and I would like us to all put our best foot forward to see who did.
Okay.
So,
and is there going to be much evidence for individual people, or are we just going to kind of take stabs in the dark based on?
There's a reason why I'm doing so much reading and telling so much story. It's because I want us to draw our own conclusions. What I'm saying about each person is kind of isolated, but some of them will come up again. Like people like Collins, George Hamilton, they'll come up again. So Collins, the Patty Collins, her roommate and backup singer, disappeared without a trace directly on the heels of her murder. Krista's murder, and has never been found or questioned, which is not true because they ended up questioning her during Cold Case, and I'll bring that up later. Well, okay. They questioned someone who they think is Patty Collins, which is interesting. We'll get into that. What we've been told is this. Apparently, Krista moved out of her lavish home that was financed by Stuart Duncan by 1976 and began living in a two-story loft on Franklin Ave. Known as the Red House for its predominantly red interior decor and also the fact that they fucked everybody in it, she shared the space with Patty Collins. She and Collins apparently began a sexual relationship. Collins is thought to have been the same age or slightly younger than Krista, 25 or 26. Quote, I could tell she wasn't really into me. This is a guy who was dating. A music agent source for WhoKilledKristaHelms.com told them, I could tell she wasn't really into me. This being Patty, because she was more into the lesbian thing with Patty. Oh, Krista was dating this man.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So the quote is, that was okay, but I always got bad vibes from Patty. She always seemed very jealous and unpleasant. When the investigators questioned me after Krista's murder, I told them Patty was the only one they should be looking at.
Oh, so she was also hooking up with Patty.
Yeah, she was hooking up with Patty and these other guys.
Interesting.
Actor George Hamilton testified to similar suspicions when he was questioned by police. Do you know George Hamilton, Ben? Is that an actor you know the name of?
Yeah, isn't he the one with like a really big tan?
Very tan, famous, very narrow face. I saw a picture of him. He looked like, I looked at him and I was like, Ben's going to know that guy.
Okay.
Because he looked like a guy that's been in stuff.
I don't know much about what, I think he was in like some movies. He might have been the host of a TV show, but
you're about as
something
useful
like that.
As a poopy flavored lollipop. So Krista recorded many of her sexual conquests in both her diary and on audio tape. Following her murder, detectives were able to recover a handful of those recordings, but most of them were lost. One of these featured a three-way sexual encounter with Hamilton, Krista, and Patty Collins. That's why Hamilton is real forefront here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
According to author Fred Rosen, Hamilton observed that he felt a, quote, particular tension between these two women, and there was something involving a control that Patty was exercising over Krista. Krista's roommates in the months before her death, Stephanie, also told us she got a bad vibe from Patty. This might be a pile-on situation as well. But Patty's disturbing presence wasn't the only source of tension in the recording studio. Blair Aronson, the keyboardist, was also sleeping with Krista, was another bandmate we are not permitted to identify publicly at this time. Meanwhile,
are you serious?
Yeah.
What?
Meanwhile, backup singer Debbie Danilow was said to have been obsessed with Blair, the one who was sleeping with Krista, and jealous of Krista for being the center of Blair's affections.
Oh my God, so many people are fucking. Like, I've
she
never...
She was a tornado of...
I mean, that's crazy.
Sex.
Can you top me off?
It's also just everything around her. It just... there's a lot of sex just going on.
Yeah,
like,
same.
I mean, it's the 70s, baby! Free love! You know, it's funny. This is the first time that we've done a story. Do you... How much...
That's good.
Oh, that's good. Sorry, we're topping off if you're listening online. If you can see us on the computer, you're watching us do this. But what I was going to say is that this is the first time that we're talking about the 70s, and that sex free love stuff is really coming out. Let me tell you
that. Yeah, I'm like, did she get an STD?
I don't think you don't even know at this time. I don't think.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
They all got warts.
Oh, you had the warts. I feel like, what's the lice of the pubes? What's it called? Crabs was huge.
The
in
lice
the 70s.
Of the pubes.
The lice of the lice. Pubes.
It's really the lice of the pubes. Yeah. The
they call it 70s lice.
My friend got it. Recently.
You can't get crabs in 2021.
He did, yeah. And he was living in Connecticut and he was like hooking up with a lot of like old dudes and apparently they gave him crabs. It's like
it's like a relic.
Do you have to have a bush to have crabs to get crabs? Can you get crabs in your ass if it's dudes?
I'm not sure.
Can you ask him? Let's bring him on the line. All right, we got this guy on the line. Yeah. Crabs in the ass, sir. All right, sorry. Back to this murder. Following Krista's murder, Blair, this is the guy that she was sleeping with, but the other woman was jealous of, Blair offered investigators a startling observation. The night prior to her murder, Blair claims that he slept with Krista in his apartment. In the midst of their lovemaking, they caught a sight of Danilo. Blair is a man.
Okay. Last name?
Blair Aronson.
Oh, okay.
The keyboardist. They caught sight of Danilo, that woman, the other woman involved that was obsessed with them, who was standing outside the window looking in on them. It was a creepy moment that took on greater resonance once Krista was found dead 24 hours later.
Yeah, no kidding.
The findings contained in Krista's autopsy report contradicts Blair's story, however. According to a New York Post article featuring interviews with her friend and makeup artist Ilana Harkavy, she had a lot of friends too, and attorney David Burstein, Krista made a return visit to New York roughly 6 months prior to her murder. It is unclear exactly what her business was in the city or if she looked up Sugar Daddy Stuart Duncan while she was there. Stuart Duncan, remember him earlier? It is believed that by that time, Duncan had stopped bankrolling Krista's efforts to achieve stardom, which left her in a financial pinch.
Interesting.
It's also interesting to note that Krista's roommate Stephanie says that Stuart Duncan made a trip to L.A. to visit Krista in the final months of her life. Stephanie felt that Duncan's behavior around Krista was leechy and demeaning.
Well, I'm speculating here, like maybe because he was shutting off her funds, she was like, I'll release a bunch of stuff.
Tapes. That's a really good. Oh, okay. I'm glad May's paying attention. Ben, once again, wonderful contributions.
I got a little lost with
all the lovers.
There's a lot of sex. There's a web of
Ben's
sex.
Ben's never heard about this much sex.
It's crazy.
So Duncan, let me tell you something. I don't like him. A bankroller like this that you kind of feel like ownership over someone, I believe, you know what I mean?
It's weird. It reminds me of some club
But does
owners.
Duncan's...
yeah, let me tell you that.
But
let's name names.
But does Duncan have this power over...
no one does is, Duncan actually. Have it's very upsetting.
What, Ben?
You know what I mean?
What did Duncan say? Go ahead.
Does Duncan still have this power over her at this point? Because I thought that it was more like in the early stages.
She blew the money that she made from Godspell. She moved to LA like a year or two before her death. He bankrolled her in the start. We don't know when she was cut off, but she was cut off. And it seems like she blew that money from Godspell, and she's all smoke and mirrors. So it seems like if she went back to New York, she probably wanted to see her daughter. But also at some point, I don't think her daughter's with her. I don't know. It's probably for the best that her daughter's not involved with all of this.
Yep.
I would posit that she was also probably saw him and was probably trying to get the money back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Towards the end of 1976, around this time that Duncan had been there and was leechy and demeaning and like all that stuff was happening, Harrison, she's fucking everybody that's recording the album. Krista's childhood friend, Darlene, received a postcard from Krista. It read, quote, "I'm in over my head and I might need to disappear for a while. If anything happens to me, please take care of Nicole."
Oh my God, that's insane. She
sent out a postcard that was like, "I'm about to get got." That's insane.
So she knows. Well, she's
dead.
Yeah,
she knows that someone's after her.
She would know.
Someone's after her, which would kind of... That leads credence to the blackmail thing. It seems like she's in way over her head. Possibly she's going after somebody.
I think
like,
so. Maybe that band member that would not be named.
That's
suspicious. Like, who cares at this point? I mean, she's fucked half
Hollywood.
Names.
Yeah, honestly. If you didn't fuck her, you should be like a fucking loser. all right, let's talk about the actual murder, okay? Krista was attending a party with Stephanie, her roommate, remember? Her last roommate, in Laurel Canyon the night of February 11th, 1977. When she spoke to us, Stephanie said that something had obviously spooked Krista at that party. When us being whokilledkristahelm.com.
Okay.
quote, "Krista approached me with a funny, cloudy look on her face," she recalled. "I asked her what was wrong. She told me it was nothing, but I could tell something had shaken her. I'll never forget that look." Stephanie was going to spend the weekend at the beach with her then boyfriend, so she gave her car keys to Krista. Imagine having a boyfriend then. What a fucking loser.
Yeah, right.
Stephanie then left Krista and does not know how much longer she stayed at the party. We don't know if Krista, we, again, I'm when I say we and things like that, this is whokilledkristakelm.com.
Okay.
which I guess we're a part of now. We don't know if Krista made additional stops after leaving the party, but we do know where her journey ended. In the early morning hours of February 12th, 1977, Krista drove to Sandy Smith's house. Sandy Smith was like one of their friends at the time. At 9020 Lloyd Place in West Hollywood. She parked in front of the neighbor's house. Investigators say she was traveling at an advanced speed because her tire was blown out on the curb. However, in the photos of the scene from that night, the tires are visible and do not appear to be blown. Regardless, okay. If Krista was driving erratically, it could indicate that she knew she was being followed. Krista was attacked from behind with a significantly sized butcher knife and a blunt object on the other side of the property from where she parked. Her body was partially tucked under a parked car belonging to Sandy's live-in girlfriend, Nancy. There's a problem. Trained in martial arts, Krista fought hard against her attackers. In the end, the ferocity of her killer proved too much. Who killed Krista?
Oh, did she learn it from
said a lot of shit.
The karate guy.
Yeah, from the karate guy. That's the one good thing that fuck ever gave her, let me tell you that.
And her daughter.
Uh-huh. Let's hope the daughter learned karate, too. Let me tell you that.
I don't know.
A man named Thurman Brooms happened upon Krista's body around 1:30 a.m., and he claimed he was standing above her when she drew her last breath.
Oh, my God. What?
He knocked on the door of Sandy Smith, but received no answer. He then drove to the nearest police station, the Los Angeles Sheriff's Office, West Hollywood Division, and alerted them to his grisly discovery. At the time, he was the owner of Bear's Limo Service. Thurman Brooms, the guy who found her family, confirmed to us that he had indeed discovered Krista's body and spent the morning at the police station being questioned. On December 5th, 1979, this 2 years later, Brooms himself would be found murdered in a drug-related assassination.
Oh, my God.
They arrested somebody. I don't think
she was involved. Was she involved in drugs in any way? Is there any evidence of that?
There was never really mention of drugs. Actually, in her autopsy, there was nothing in her body. Even though she was at a party, there was no alcohol or barbiturates in her system.
Oh, interesting.
Wow, 70s.
70s.
Yeah.
She was surprising.
Imagine Stone Cold sober fucking the world, huh?
Yeah.
That's why she was taking meticulous notes. She remembered everything, every detail.
She's a good student of
Let's
sex.
Talk about the... Well, I think we're all a student of sex. You know? You never stop learning, especially when you never have it. Krista's purse was missing and never recovered. This has led to speculation that the attacker might have been after her diary, which Krista is said to have kept in her possession at all times.
Okay.
Detective Larry Ganzi was assigned to the case. From the start...
At all times?
Yeah. Listen, you ever need to just kind of look on... How big was Warren Beatty's dick? 8.
It's like your iPhone. You never have to wonder.
Yeah. From the start, it was obvious that the murder was carried out with a great deal of rage. It looked like a personal killing and not a simple mugging gone wrong. Krista displayed a series of defensive wounds on her hands, arms, and shins. It appears as though she used her karate training to fight back hard. She also showed signs of being beaten with a blunt object about the face and head, which opened the door to the notion of two killers working in tandem.
Okay.
The original investigation went absolutely nowhere. In fact, their main suspect, which they bring up again in the cold case, but it also goes nowhere, was that like around these like same couple streets, there was like a famous serial killer killing.
Oh, interesting.
Around then, but the motive isn't there, and the way of killing is completely different.
But the motive for the serial killer is, what was the motive? Usually they just like kill.
I don't know, but there was a high profile killing. The only reason why they thought it might have been that person was it was in a similar location, but really they were very different types of killing.
Right, so maybe just different weapons or different kinds of victims or something. Yeah.
All right, so years later, when Krista's daughter Nicole called the LASD, Los Angeles something, asked them to pick up the case. When she asked them to pick up the case again, Detectives Larry Bradenburg, another Larry, and Thomas Harris were assigned the case. They got to working on tracking old contacts and leads and reconstructing the phantom threads of a case that had essentially been abandoned decades earlier. They just gave up on this case, which also leads my credence to the fact that, like, I really feel like something was going on here.
Yeah, that's like, so weird. It's a big deal. She's involved with a lot of people.
When you're questioning literal famous people, she's in a wealthy neighborhood. A beautiful white woman gets murdered in a nice neighborhood of Hollywood,
in the 70s,
and she's been an actor in the 70s. You would think this would be a national case,
right?
And there'd be a lot of attention. It's very interesting.
It's very weird
because it's
suspicious.
You would think that there would be like national coverage, being like Black Dahlia again, like something like that. You know what I mean? Like it's like this is a case that like any other time would have been like an absolutely massive case because the Black Dahlia, she was also like she had even less credits than this woman having.
Right. And like there was
so who
a,
would be
talk of her
who would be the
worker.
Most powerful person that she slept with that
I mean,
would
other
be
than
capable
the Shah,
of
Shah, the literal Shah of Iran. well, I would say
yeah, but the Shah
at the time it was
actually,
Harrison. Oh, yeah. Let me. Can I talk more about this, or do you want to? Do you want to tell the story, Ben? Do you want to tell the story, Ben? Does COVID-19 give you a false sense of confidence in whether or not you know? Is that
no,
what this
baby?
Is?
I'm losing senses, not gaining them.
Okay, this is Ben's gonna love this one. I just chug my wine. Ben's going to love this. I'm going to finish it. Ben, you're going to love this. sorry. So one of the more intriguing leads when they do the cold case involved Tony Sirico, the actor who memorably portrayed the role of Paulie Walnuts in the hit series The Sopranos.
Hey!
Paulie Walnuts?
Yeah, Paulie Walnuts
oh,
is a main... Paulie Walnuts.
Okay.
The one who's like...
Yeah, yeah.
Sirico...
Aren't they all like that?
Yeah, but he's really like... So Sirico operated in New York at the time Krista was living there, and he was apparently a member of the Columbo crime family and garnered over 24 arrests.
Oh, so he was like an actual mobster?
He was an
mobster?
Actual mobster that they brought in as an actor. In the immediate
I mean, that performance, he must have been.
It was method. It was method. It was so method, he was doing it before the show. In the immediate aftermath of Krista's murder, Stephanie received a spooky phone call. The quote is, "I heard you like to party," the menacing male voice said. "I'm right down the street." Sufficiently frightened by the call, Stephanie and Lenny enlisted Tony to stay with her for a while to keep her safe. So they brought Tony in to keep her safe. Cold case investigators questioned Sirico and asked him about a claim that he had taken furs and tapes from Krista's apartment the night she was killed. Sirico denied all associates with Krista and asked for a lawyer. He was never questioned again, and our requests for further conversations with Tony have been denied. Amazing that Tony didn't want to talk to whokilledkristahelm.com.
Yeah.
I guess.
How did he know?
The thought process is there. Maybe he stole a fur. Maybe he stole some of the prominent tapes that she was keeping, and the mob was using those to kind of hold over people's heads. And like maybe she's somebody who would have known that they were doing this. I think it's a little far fetched, especially because he's from the New York days. And I got a feeling like if it's somebody from the New York days, it's somebody more significant, or it's somebody from those LA days.
Interesting.
The
okay.
major finding during this course of the investigation involved a startling DNA profile. Using blood samples found under Krista's preserved nail clippings, the test indicated that they were consistent with a female.
Oh!
This sample could accurately point the finger at the gender of the killer, or it might merely indicate a completely innocuous encounter.
Or, like, maybe she's having sex with the girl.
Yeah.
Claws a little bit.
Let me tell you something. You could most of the time, you'd be like, well, would you have fucked somebody that night? And it's like... Possibly.
Right.
The slightest touch can leave a detectable DNA profile. For instance, Krista lived with Stephanie, had spent time with her earlier that evening, and was driving her car to Sandy's home. Her DNA could innocently and logically wind up on Krista. To this date, however, Stephanie has not been swabbed for DNA. Isn't that a little strange?
Very strange.
Her roommate at the time, who was the last person to see her alive.
And is a female and all that
stuff. Is a female and was like... Oh, I was going away with my boyfriend for that weekend. She was possibly killed by two people. And she also was like, she was so shaken. I was worried about her that night.
Yeah, it's weird.
She told police, she was like, later in the car that night, I was like, I couldn't stop thinking about Krista. I was so worried.
And you're like,
And it's like, let me tell you something. I don't like it.
Yeah, I think that's
so suspect. So why do you think, before getting into the mystery of who killed her, I know you have a few things left, but like, why do you think this thing got buried so much? And that no one cared.
I wouldn't be surprised if here's the thing. This is where it turns into, you know what? They don't respect the woman who sleeps with everyone. You know what I mean?
That, yeah.
Where it's like, how known is it that she's sleeping with everyone? And if the cops are like, well, listen, it was bound to happen one day. She's fucking everybody she meets. You know
True,
what I mean?
But
I could very much see the cops throwing that away because of that. When they start investigating it and they realize that literally everyone in Hollywood has a motive to kill her.
Yeah, that's true. But the Black Dahlia also kind of got around a little. Not like this. Nobody's like this. But like, you know, like you said before, like it's kind of an interesting story for the media to be like the next Black Dahlia. Like it's a lot of parallels. It's weird that they didn't jump on
story.
That.
And that's why I would like to Warren Beatty must have been huge at this time.
Right.
Obviously.
Like part of the mystery is like, why did this get covered so hard?
Why didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like covered. I mean, like covered up.
Yeah, exactly.
Strange.
So I would imagine she also fucked politicians.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's what I think is more significant than the actors,
because
in terms of the cover up. Because I think the actors, if it was just Beatty and Nicholson and Hamilton and all those people, then I think it's going to be a sensationalist story. But if it's people in like political power, then I could see those people being able to squash it.
Those were the good old days when a politician could push you in front of a train and no one ever asked why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enough said.
God forbid. God forbid people are able to do that anymore. Jeez.
All right.
PC world we live in.
Remember that there were also tapes in addition to the diary. And the tapes were recording her sexcapades with all those celebrity boyfriends.
Oh,
the investigators say the tapes are, quote, very significant part of the case because those tapes could have supplied a motive for someone to kill Krista. Quote, we don't know if there may have been an extortion or a thought of extortion, Detective Harris says. Krista's friend Darlene warned her against making the tapes. Quote, I thought it was dangerous, she says. I thought she was playing with fire. Darlene was the woman who got that postcard. With the help of an anonymous tip, the cold case squad finally tracked down the woman they believed was Krista's girlfriend, Patty Collins. Remember her?
Yeah.
Patty and Krista had a relationship according to more than one person. They had a close sexual relationship and a professional relationship. At some point, they had a falling out with one another. It looks like, according to these people, wasn't serious enough for a murder. We don't know that, but we'd like to talk to Patty about that, Bradenburg said. The detectives had no trouble getting their swab of DNA and an interview, but they were stunned by what Patty had to say. Quote, no, I don't know, Krista Helm.
What?
They showed me pictures and no one looks familiar in those photographs at all. I don't know anything.
Huh?
That's crazy.
That's
suspicious.
What this woman they thought was the woman who was known to fuck her.
Yeah.
Lived with her, was a backup singer. So either it wasn't that woman or this woman did it. And not only that, Patty claimed this woman claimed she was never in Southern California.
What?
And Detective Harris, this cold case detective who didn't charge her with anything. This is the last thing that I have. She was in Southern California. We know that. But for some reason, she's denying ever being there in her life.
So she's just a crazy person.
She's either absolutely insane.
Or they have like literally the wrong Patty.
Or she's like a different woman.
Yeah, right.
But they never charged her. And again, the cold case brought nothing to. Again, it died out.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. Interesting.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's the case.
Wow.
Beautifully done.
Thank you. Thank you.
I would like to think that it was a woman that murdered her just for the
let me tell you something.
Twist.
All parts of this kind of point to it being a feminist end to a feminist story.
True, but it was definitely a man.
Well, let me tell you something.
Counterpoint, it was a man.
Let me tell you something. This was a lady with a lot of fucking chutzpah and moxie and a black belt. A woman's not taking her down.
That's what I was about to say. The black belt part and the chutzpah.
And the fact that she did so much fighting, even though she was attacked from behind. I will say, if it was two people, I would actually believe it was a woman and a man.
That's interesting, yeah.
Could be that.
Her roommate and her boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly. Actually. Stephanie and the boyfriend. Maybe she fucked that boyfriend.
Yeah.
Was she like some sort of supernatural
being?
She
probably would be fucking.
She's a fucking
boyfriend.
Real life siren. You meet this woman and you're like, I gotta do it.
You have to fuck her.
You have to fuck her. One of us is gonna have to. Every time she enters the room, the people go, one of us is gonna have to fuck Krista.
Fine. At least one.
Well, no. In that recording studio, she fucked every single person.
That's crazy.
The backup singers. The actual DJ.
That's nice
DJ.
To fuck the backup singers. They don't get much.
That is nice.
Well,
yeah.
And then let me tell you
charitable.
Something. You give the backup singer a taste of stardom, that Patty character, it goes to their head.
That's true.
I feel bad for backup singers because they're just as talented.
No, they're good, yeah.
And then
They're missing that it factor.
The sex appeal.
And the it factor. All right, folks. I'll remind you of some people, some of the big names.
Okay.
George Harrison, which was the biggest actor closest to the time of death. Patty Harrison, one of her roommates, but not right before she died, but she was known to bang her and recorded music with her.
And she was said to
have this weird obsession with her.
And she said out of nowhere.
Yeah, out of nowhere. And then she disappeared immediately out of nowhere. And then years later, they tracked down someone who might have been her who said, that's not me.
Wait, so nobody even knows where she is?
No, she disappeared directly after the murder. This woman, Patty. No one knew anything about her beforehand.
Do you think maybe she got killed too?
I wouldn't be surprised if she got killed too.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe she got killed too.
This Harrison, who had sex with both of them, and there's a tape of it.
Okay.
But anyway, you also have Stuart Duncan. the guy who was financing her, the Godspell guy who was financing her, who had cut her off, and he had seen her briefly before her death. Mm-hmm. Her roommate Stephanie's boyfriend. They were also close to her. And let me tell you something. Anybody who cares too much when somebody dies, I also don't trust that.
No.
I know that's horrible to say.
That is a fucking coming from a true sociopath.
That's a red flag.
Anyone who's sad when someone
weird. It's like, okay, what's this for? Attention?
Yeah. Like, it's like, yeah. Why are you saying that? There's also the guy Blair and the woman who was obsessed with him. The guy Blair who said he had sex with her the night before her murder, and that woman who was obsessed with him was outside watching.
Oh my God. Okay.
Mm-hmm. There are too many people with motives here.
Yeah, there's endless suspects.
The fact that there's so many suspects, but like real genuine suspects, whereas like in other cases, it's like suspects are like, I guess this guy could have done it.
Yeah.
But these are real suspects with real motive. The case was open twice, and they didn't get lit. They didn't get dicking anywhere.
No.
Too much.
So crazy.
Too many. It's like the menu at a Greek diner. There's too many options.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I like I don't know, actually.
The final crazy person, remind me of her name.
Patty.
The one that's, yeah. I mean, that's just so bizarre. I mean, maybe it's just a thing of like freaking out because you're being interrogated, but to go that far.
Yeah.
And she disappeared? Or Stephanie disappeared?
Patty disappeared. Stephanie talked to whokilledchristahelm.com.
Oh, I see. I definitely don't think Stephanie then, because why? Well, I don't know, because a lot of murderers go back to the scene of the crime and
they
get involved with the media and stuff like that. So maybe that's
women
a sign
killers
of guilt.
Are usually ones that are more empathetic like to it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I could see her just kind of switching that thing in her brain where she like, mm-hmm. if you lie enough, you think you actually think you're helping.
Right? Right.
The DNA was the woman thing, but that could be unrelated. She was known to fuck women too.
Yeah.
So I really
don't want to.
Yep.
I don't want to throw Duncan out of there. I mean, because it seems like that was a creepy, you know, kind of movie plot like thing going on. I don't think Duncan literally did it. I think, but it sounds like maybe possible that he had some henchmen.
Let me tell you something though. I think the three of us might write a movie about this.
This sounds like a great movie.
This is a movie. Mm-hmm. This might even be.
This
can
is
I
a
tell
film.
You something? Is it a TV series? Is it a mini series on a premium cable channel so we can show full penetration?
Oh, that'd be nice. Full penetration.
Full penetration.
Why don't we not even do this story, but just make a movie with full penetration?
Yeah. Let's just become porn directors.
You know what would be great about this movie? The soundtrack.
You think?
You get like some really good
like
70s
sexy,
disco.
Disco tracks.
Plus there's a lot of
musicians. Yeah, it like really sends you back.
A lot of musicians in the story. Mm-hmm. A lot of celebrity. You know what's fun? I love when movies and TV have like actors playing iconic people.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That is fun.
Yes. Who would play Nicholson?
Me, obviously.
Yes.
No.
I see it.
Yeah, thank you. Twist, I think we can get Efron to play it.
Efron, no, because Nicholson's not that traditionally handsome. Like he's very like attractive, but he's not
young.
Like,
Jack Nicholson fucked. Let me tell you that.
No doubt. Did you hear me?
Yeah,
say
I did not hear you deny it. Let me tell you something. I'll tell you right now. I don't think Tony Sirico did it. I know. I don't think Thurman, the guy who saw him, this limo guy. I don't know. I really 3 years later, I don't know if like, do you think he saw more than he said that night? And maybe years later he was murdered in connection to that, or he was just assassinated for a different reason. But it's weird that the guy who found her body was assassinated a few years later.
It's extremely weird. Yeah.
I mean, this story, it was making my head do flips as I was reading it. My jaw was on the floor.
It's insane.
What a website.
Who killed KristaHelms.com?
One of the great websites.
I keep saying it because I'd like somebody who watches this. I hope somebody can fucking be like, wait a second. I know Patty.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
I would like it to be solved. God forbid.
Me too.
Mm. But in traditional fashion, can I say it? We've been had.
Oh.
We were.
Big time.
Mm-hmm. Ben, thank you for joining us in person. As always, it's nice to have you in the middle of us. thank you for listening, everyone.
Bye, everybody. Bye.